Well, good morning, everyone. It's lovely to be back again with you today. Thank you to Kenny and Frida for giving me the opportunity to speak to you again this morning. I was here, I think it was exactly this Sunday last year, as far as I know, when the big snow was here. And I know some of you were snowed in and didn't get here. But it's lovely to be back with you today and to be able to share a little bit more about the great need that's in our world, and to hopefully, as Frida was praying, hopefully stir us to action, because that's what the world needs. It needs you and I to do something. And as I was thinking about the service this morning, I was reminded of those verses that were read to us from the book of Matthew, where Jesus is teaching us how to pray. And they're probably among the best known verses in the Bible. Some of you will know them from your little children. The Lord's Prayer. Maybe you learnt them like me in school. Or maybe you recite them in your church services from time to time. The Lord's Prayer, probably the best known verses maybe in our Bible. And I was just thinking about them and thinking how they are almost like a little pattern for prayer, a series of requests. But one of the things that I have, suppose, have not really seen much before is the very first thing that Jesus, in this pattern for prayer, tells us to pray for. So the first thing that we're spoken about in the prayer is who we're to pray to. Our Father in heaven. That's not a request. That's who we're to pray to. We're to pray to our Father in heaven. And then the very first thing that Jesus tells us to pray for is recorded. Hallowed be thy name. Hallowed be thy name. And I want to think about that just for a few minutes, and then I want you to come with me on a journey out to one of the countries that we work in. Hallowed be your name. What does that mean? Well, the word hallowed isn't a word we use very much today. It means holy or set apart or special or devoted to the work and the service of God. So the first thing that we're to pray for is that we're to pray that God would be set apart, would be made holy, would be made special in the lives of people. So those that aren't hallowing his name, that they would come to hallow it. And in actual fact, if you think about that, the very first thing that Jesus tells us that we're to pray for, before we even pray for our daily bread, is to pray a missionary prayer. We ought to be missionary prayer. Lord, may those who don't know your name come to know your name. May your name be hallowed. May your name be spread. May your name be made known right around this world. The very first thing that Jesus tells us that we're to pray for in our pattern for prayer is a missionary prayer. And I don't know that I've noticed that all these years I've known this little prayer and known these verses. I don't know that I've really noticed that much before. That mission ought to be front and center of our lives, of our praying, and of these lives of ours. If we're not involved in mission, in somehow pushing the gospel to those who have never heard it before, then somehow we're not grasping what prayer is. We're not grasping what God is like. We're not grasping what the gospel is like. And we're not grasping what being a Christian is. The very first thing that Jesus tells us to pray for is this. Lord, may those who are not treating your name holy, may they come to treat it as holy. May those who are not following you and obeying your commandments come to follow and obey your commandments. May those who are not facing, those who are facing your displeasure and anger, may they, Lord, they hear about your mercy and your grace. Lord, may your great name be hallowed in all the world. And I want you to keep that in mind this morning, because with that little prayer and that pattern for prayer and Jesus putting mission at the very center of prayer and of our lives, I want to take you on a journey out to Asia. And I want to show you something of the great need and the challenge of bringing the gospel in one of the most difficult and dark countries in the world. And my fear is that this morning we'll sit and look and watch at what's on the screen and go out and it won't actually have any impact on us. My fear is that we'll watch and do nothing about it. That we'll watch and it be like water off a duck's back. My prayer is that what we have just read from the Lord's Prayer would be something that would impact us this morning. That as we watch the people of this wee part of the world, as we see the way they're living, as they see the lack of opportunity that they have to hear about the gospel, that we would go from here today saying, Lord, may your great name be hallowed in the lives of these people. These people that I've spent the last 30 minutes in their company, may these people who don't know about you, who aren't following you, who aren't loving you, who aren't obeying you, who aren't glorifying you, Lord, please, for your glory, turn them around. Turn them around. And may your great name be hallowed in the lives of these people today. We work, as Frida is saying, right across in the continent of Asia, from Iran and Iraq over in the west, right through to North Korea over in the east, and from Mongolia in the north, right through to the Maldives Islands in the south. Almost all of the world's unreached people groups live in northern Africa or else in Asia. And 75% of the world's unreached people groups live in this part of the world. This is the great untouched part of our world when it comes to the initial work of taking the gospel to people. And what I want to do this morning is, I don't have time to tell you about all the countries that we work in. I just want to take you to one of them. And maybe on this PW service, maybe this is something that might interest some of the ladies and some of the men. The Maldives Islands. It is the number one honeymoon destination in the world. Maybe that might interest some of you this morning if you're thinking of getting married. Maybe some of you ladies in the PW have a special anniversary coming up. Maybe this is the kind of place you want to be going home and, you know, tapping your husband on the shoulder about or something. I don't know. But the Maldives Islands is a great honeymoon destination. And if you went into a travel agent with lots of money to burn, then they might want to put a brochure like this in front of you. When you think of the Maldives Islands, you might think of a tropical island like this that you could spend a week lying in the sun. Maybe on a beach house like this, right in the middle of the sea. If we can go a little bit closer, you can see what these beach houses look like. Here they are. You can see, you can wake up in the morning in your bed, and you'll go to sleep with the sound of the waves underneath your feet. You walk just a few meters to your little breakfast table. Your breakfast will be served for you. Then you can go and lie down on a little bed just beside your swimming pool. You have your own private swimming pool that no one will disturb you in. And then in the evening, you can climb down those steps just to the right and into the warm, warm waters, blue, clear waters of the Indian Ocean. It's what many people will describe as paradise on earth. And maybe when you think of the Maldives Islands, that's what you think of, an island paradise, one of the most perfect places on the planet. But that is not what the Maldives Islands are like. That's what foreign people do on the Maldives Islands. But that's not what the Maldivian people are like or how they're living. And so for the remaining moments of my time, I just want to give you a little picture of what life is like in this part of the world, and something of the challenge of working in that part of the world. Well, this hasn't got a pointer, has it? Oh, it's got a pointer. Oh, there it is. There we go. Great. Thanks, Les. There we go. So there we are. There's where it is. There's India. You can see Sri Lanka, and then right just off the coast of India is this little group of islands called the Maldives. The Maldives is made up, well, the name of it means a garland or string of islands. And that's, I suppose, the shape of it. It's like this shape, the Maldives. It's like the shape of a garland or a string of pearls. And the Maldives is made up of 26 natural atolls. Now, if you don't know what a natural atoll is, then you maybe want to look it up or Google it. But it's a geographical, a volcanic geographical formation. And this is a satellite photograph looking down on one of the atolls. So there's one atoll. You can see it's like a bean shape or a heart-shaped formation. There's a second atoll. And you can see inside the atoll, you can see these little dots. And these are the islands. 1,190 islands make up the Maldives. And they're just dropped into these atolls in the middle of the Indian Ocean. And they're hundreds of miles apart from north to south. There used to be 1,192 islands in the Maldives, but two of them were snatched by the great enemy of the Maldivian people. The great enemy of the Maldivian people is the sea. The sea level, rising sea levels, have snatched and stolen two of the Maldivian islands. Now here in Dromara, and where I live in Ballyclare, we don't have to worry about rising sea levels. If the sea level rose a few feet down at Larne or in Belfast Lough, it's going to make no difference to you down here in Dromara. But if I told you that the highest mountain in the Maldive Islands is 8 feet, then you can see that rising sea levels make all the difference. So there's something to keep in mind when you're spraying your links on in the morning, gentlemen, or ladies, when you're spraying your hair or whatever it is that causes global warming. That has an impact on our world. The Maldivian people fear that in 30 years, all of their islands will be underwater unless we do something about it. 1,190 islands. As I said, most people, if you were to picture the Maldive Islands and you have a wee picture in your head, it might look something like this. A beautiful tropical island, and on it a fantastic hotel and beautiful beaches and a luxury resort where people can spend their time in. But, you know, in reality, it's far from that. It's just made up of over 1,000 little islands dropped into the Indian Ocean. Some of those islands are no bigger than your church property. Tiny little islands. And on those islands, some of them, local people live. In order to get to those islands, you're either going to go by boat here, or else you'll go by, some of them will have a little runway, a little airstrip. And this is one of the wee planes that we were on when we visited the Maldive Islands and visited our team there. Just a little tiny plane like this. Now, if you have ever been on a small plane like this, you'll know that you have to get your luggage weighed. But in the Maldives, they not just weigh your luggage, you not just stand on the scales to weigh your luggage, they ask you to step onto the luggage weighing machine as well. So here's me, like an idiot, standing on the luggage machine, and the weighing machine, thankfully, that's too far away for you to guess and see what weight I am. But the reason why you and your luggage have to get onto this weighing machine is because this little plane has to land on a tiny little island, and they want to make sure that there's not too much weight, therefore too much speed, and the wee plane ends up in the middle of the sea somewhere. So the plane takes off, and it flies over these atolls, and down below, you start to get a picture of real Maldivian life. Not a luxury resort owned by a big hotel chain, but real Maldivian life. Tiny islands, cram-packed, full of people. And when you arrive on those tiny islands, they're beautiful, from the sea. Beautiful, sandy, white beaches. Blue, crystal clear sea. It does look like paradise until you go inland and you find there's almost no investment, no roads, electricity that doesn't work very well, no tarmac roads, no drainage. So when the rain falls, these little sandy roads just flood and can remain flooded outside people's houses for weeks on end. There are no shopping centres, no leisure centres, no cinemas. There's nothing to do. On a patch of ground the size of your church, some of them as small as that, what else can you do but fish? And life here is just incredibly simple. Block, concrete, cement houses with almost nothing else on board. I can't tell you really much more than that about those tiny little islands because there's so little to talk about. But there are one or two islands that are much bigger than that. And this is one of them. This is the capital city of the Maldives. This is Mali. And Mali is the gateway to the islands. About a third of Maldivian people live in this concrete jungle. Space is a premium. They can't build to the north, to the south, to the east, or the west. As the song goes, the only way is up. And so they build these high-rise apartments, these concrete jungle. It's like Manhattan in the middle of the Indian Ocean. And I want to spend the rest of my time, the next 5 or 10 minutes or so, just showing you a few things that you'll find in Mali, where Maldivian people live, what life is like for the people in the island of the Maldives, and especially in Mali. There are 5 things that you'll see and 2 things that you won't see. 5 things that you'll see in Mali. First of all, you'll see narrow streets. No luxury paradise here. No palm trees, just dark, pokey, narrow little streets. Why narrow streets? Because space is a premium. Every inch matters. Buildings are built inches apart. It wasn't unusual for us to wake up from our little guest house, open the window, reach across the road, and to be able to shake hands with our neighbor across the road, because the streets are narrow and compact, because space is a premium. 2 square miles, 165,000 people crammed like sardines into a tin. And Mali is full of narrow, pokey, dark little streets. Here's the second thing you'll notice about the Maldives. It is not a political paradise. It's a place of political unrest. The former president was a deeply unpopular man. He had sold off islands to rich Arab sheikhs and pocketed the money, and no one knew where the money had gone, and people didn't like it. And the opposition party were speaking out against the president. And just before we arrived in this island paradise, so-called, trouble brews in the middle of the island. The opposition leader speaks out against the president and tells him he's corrupt. So the president arrests the opposition leader. Jeremy Corbyn, in fact, is put into prison in the Maldives. So the opposition leader is put into prison. And people are right onto the streets protesting about what the president has done. The high court judges in the land, 6 of them, meet. And they tell the president, you can't do this. Just because you don't like what the man's saying, you can't put them into prison. So the president arrests all the high court judges and puts them into prison. Now the country's in uproar. Political rallies, tear gas, stones thrown at the police. And there we are in the middle of it all on the island of Mali. Curfew is called. There's an attempted coup. They try to overthrow the government. The police are brought out into the street and tear gas and baton rounds. And the coup is quelled. There is political unrest on this island paradise. Here's the third thing you'll notice about the Maldives. The Maldives and Mali is full of rubbish. Now, if you spend about £6,000 on a week's holiday there, don't worry, they'll have got a wee man up in the morning to go along the beach and clear all the rubbish away. It'll be perfect for you. But in Mali, the capital city, you'll see rubbish everywhere. There is no bins to put rubbish. So those plastic bottles end up in the sea, and then they get washed up on the different beaches. This is just round the corner from where we were staying on that little island. You can see it's just full of rubbish that's been dumped here. Here's another little thing you'll notice about Mali. 4th thing. Mali, when you walk up the streets, the narrow little streets, you'll find lots of tea rooms. We call them coffee shops here. I'm sure the ladies in the PW this morning have, you know, sampled the odd cup of coffee somewhere around Dromara or Balnahinch or wherever it may be. Tea rooms are what they call them in Mali. And there are hundreds of these tea rooms that are part of the culture and life of the city. But I want you to look really carefully and tell me what you notice about the tea rooms and the people that are in the tea rooms. The tea rooms are full of men. Women are not allowed to come to the tea rooms. Only men allowed in the tea rooms. Imagine that in Balnahinch. Or maybe there's one, I'm sure there's coffee shops in Dromara. Imagine getting to Dromara to the coffee shop tomorrow morning, the little sign in the window, men only. There would be uproar. The ladies in the PW here in the front row, they would be up in arms and out there. But that's what life is like. No women allowed in the tea rooms, only men. Women are too busy sorting out life at home and other important things to come to the tea rooms in Mali. So the tea rooms are full of men putting the world aright. Here's the last thing that you'll see in Mali, or you'll notice in Mali if you walk up the streets. You'll notice that the men in Mali have amazing hair. Now, Kenny and I both have a real interest in men's hair, as you can see. I have this thing, just love looking at men's hair. I don't know why that is, but look at the men here. Look at the beautiful hair that they have in the country of Mali. They spend a lot of time getting their hair right. And as well as lots of little tea rooms in Mali, you'll find lots of hairdressing salons for men. Lots of hairdressings. I didn't see any hairdressing salons for women when we were there for just over a week. But lots of hairdressing salons for men. So when I was away from Nolan and away from everybody in here in the UK, I would go into one of those hairdressing salons. Do you know, I've always wanted to do this. I've always wanted to say to a hairdresser, just do whatever you want. I don't know whether any of you have that kind of feeling, gentlemen. You want to go into a hairdressing salon, just say, I don't want a conservative haircut. Just do it. Whatever you want, just go mad. And my hair. So there he is, sorting out my hair. 30 minutes later, there he is. He's finished my haircut. And that's me 30 minutes later. I wish. Five things that you'll see in the Maldives. Narrow streets, political unrest, hairdressing salons, lots of rubbish, and tea rooms for men. Here's two things you won't see in the Maldives. You won't see any dogs. 1,190 islands, and there are no dogs, not one, on the Maldive Islands. They're not allowed. They're banned. Dogs are not allowed in the Maldives, just cats. And here's the second thing that you won't see in the Maldives. You won't see any alcohol. No alcohol. It's banned. Now, if you have paid £6,000 or so for a week's holiday there, and you're out on this luxury resort, the government are hypocritical enough to be able to give tourists alcohol. But for local people on the capital city, there is no alcohol allowed in the Maldives. Why is that? Why are there no women in the tea rooms? Why is there no dogs? Why is there no alcohol for sale? Well, because this is one of the strictest Muslim countries in our world. Built into the very constitution of the country is one religion allowed only. Nothing else is tolerated. Christianity is not allowed. You should already know that. If you've come in on the airplane, you'll have received a form like this from your cabin crew. No dogs. A dog is an unclean animal in a Muslim country. Touching of a dog makes you ceremonially unclean, so they're banned. No pork products. But number three, that's the one that's of most interest to me. No materials contrary to Islam. Do you know what that means? In the Maldive Islands, this book of ours is banned. Even for a Westerner bringing it into the country, this is material contrary to Islam. If you're there on your honeymoon and you've got your Bible and they find it and they search you, and they might, and they see your Bible, they'll take it off you. You're not allowed the Bible in the Maldives. It's material contrary to Islam. All Christian websites they try to block. There is one Christian Maldivian website where the gospel is proclaimed to the Maldivian people in their own language, and the government block it because it's material contrary to Islam. It's not allowed, not permitted, not part of the constitution in the country of the Maldives. And mosques are everywhere. I already mentioned this a little bit with the boys and girls and the minarets and the call to prayer. There is one religion. Hundreds of mosques on every single island. Hundreds of mosques. But one other thing is missing from the Maldives. 1,190 islands dropped into the middle of the Indian Ocean. Do you know how many Christian churches there are among the Maldivian people? Do you know how many there are? Not one. Not one. Do you know how many Christians we think that there might be on the Maldive Islands? We think that there might be 4 in all of the Maldives. Do you know in every country in the world, in the main language of the country, every country in the world, in the main language of the country, they have the Bible translated into that language, except for one. There's only one country, as far as I'm aware, in the main language of the country that doesn't have a copy of the Bible. Do you know what it is? The Maldive Islands. No church. No completed Bible. Only a handful of Christians. And I don't know about you. Maybe you're here today, and that's certainly not the picture that you've ever had of the Maldive Islands. You see it as an island paradise, a beautiful place. Place to travel, place you've maybe been to or would love to go to. The Maldives is one of the darkest wee corners of our world. And that information, as you have seen it today, the darkness, no church, no Bible, very few Christians, intense persecution of Christians and of Christianity, and any attempt to bring Christianity makes it a very difficult place to be. But for us, that information could either be something that we just listen to, and it's a little bit like, well, that's interesting. That was like a nice little geographical tour that we had this morning. Or it can bother us. Don't know if that bothers you this morning. Don't know if it upsets you this morning. Why? Why should they not have the opportunity to hear of Jesus? Why is there no church? Why is there no Bible? Lord, this can't be right. And a desire in your heart to pray that God would work on the island of the Maldives. A rising up within you, that prayer of Jesus. Lord, our Father in heaven, this cannot be right that these people know so little of you. Rise up, work in those islands, and may your name be hallowed in the lives of the Maldivian people. The Maldivian people have been without the gospel for hundreds of years. 200 years before Jesus was born, it was a Buddhist nation and stayed that way until the 12th century. In the 12th century, missionaries arrived, but they're Islamic missionaries. And the Maldivian people became Muslim people from 1153 until today. 2,200 years. With no church, few missionaries, and few attempts to bring the gospel to the Maldivian people. Imagine that. Imagine a country that has kept Jesus out for 2,000 years. There have been a couple of little attempts to bring the gospel to the Maldivian people. I don't have time to tell you all about them this morning. But these people have remained in darkness for hundreds of years. That ought to bother us. That ought to make us feel uneasy. For 2,000 years, they've kept Jesus out, and the country's full of social problems. Young people have found drugs, heroin and cocaine, and the place is riddled with social issues. It has the largest, the highest divorce rate of any country in the world, not America, not Britain, not France, not Germany. The country with the highest divorce rate in the world by a country mile is the country of the Maldives. It is a crumbling social problem. But of course, for us that are Christians, it's not the social problems that ought to tug on our hearts most. It's the fact that the people living on these islands for generations have never heard who Jesus is. This is Jenna. She works in a little hotel, and she's a receptionist in a hotel. She's a Muslim. Her mother is a Muslim. Her grandmother is a Muslim. Her great-grandmother was a Muslim. Her great-great-grandmother was a Muslim. Her great-great-great-grandmother was a Muslim. If
think you get the picture. For hundreds of years, this wee girl's family have never heard who Jesus is because there are no missionaries. There are no people there that can speak their language, or very few. There's no church. There's no Bible. The one Christian website that she could access is blocked by the government and they can't get to. And so she lives in darkness. And that ought to bother us. Lord, please, please, may your name be hallowed in her life. May her and her family somehow have the opportunity to hear who Jesus is. This wee lady lives in a group of three islands connected by a bridge and a causeway. She's a Muslim. She attends a little mosque at the bottom of her street. Her name is Nizza. Her mother was a Muslim. Her grandmother was a Muslim. Her great-grandmother, her great-great-grandmother, her great-great-great-grandmother. As far as we know, in 2,200 years, there has never been a church, never been a missionary. Never have these people have had access to the gospel that we know of. And that cannot be right. And what we're asking people today is to, first of all, ask God to let them see the need, the great need of places like this. I don't know how many churches there are in Dromara town, but in Ballyclare town, we have dozens of churches. Dozens of churches. Here on these islands, there is this enormous need. And it's our prayer is that maybe you can get involved in that and help us. We're involved in printing Bibles, getting books of the Bible translated, Luke and Acts and Psalms and Proverbs, and not only get them into paper form, but electronic form and then downloadable form. We're sending Sri Lankan missionaries, people who speak a little bit of the language, fit into the culture, and they go onto the islands and try and share the gospel. We're involved in a number of little businesses that are just allowing a platform for Christians to be able to arrive. There are little opportunities for you to help, for you to pray, and for you to get involved in bringing the gospel to these people who have never heard before. The Maldives is a place of great darkness. It's a place that needs God to move and the light of the gospel to reach. And my prayer this morning is just like that, and that we've read together, this pattern for prayer that Jesus gave, that you'll watch, you'll look, you'll see, and that God would stir us to action. To say, I'd love to do something. How could I get involved in taking the gospel to these people who have never heard before? And one of the ways you can do that is just give me 30 seconds before you go home to have your dinner. Just 30 seconds out the door there on the table. You can sign up for our magazine. The magazine's free. It won't cost you one penny, not a single penny to get. We'll send it to you four times a year, and never again will you be able to say, I didn't know about the Maldive Islands. Or I didn't know about the giraffe women that live in Burma that put rings around their neck, many of whom have never heard of Jesus. You can sign up for our magazine. Just give me your name and address, and I'll make sure the magazine comes to you. And then grab three wee things from the table. There's a wee project sheet on the country of the Maldives. Pick it up, pop it into your Bible, stick it up in the fridge. There's a wee bookmark with Nizza on it, that wee woman living on the island. Maybe you'd pray for her, for gospel work to reach her islands. Bring these people before God in prayer. And then thirdly, this wee leaflet here is just called Ways to Help. And inside it, there's things that you can do, ways in which you can get in touch with us, and ways in which you can help to make a difference in places like this, right across the continent of Asia. Our Father in heaven, may your name be hallowed across the continent of Asia, and especially in this little group of islands in the middle of the Indian Ocean. We're going to sing what I think is the best missionary hymn that I have ever heard. And it's Facing a Task Unfinished. It's been modernized a little bit to make it even better, I think. But we're going to stand and sing this great hymn that reminds us of our need to rise up and to wake up and to not sit where we are, but to get involved
in taking the good news to people who have never heard, facing a task unfinished.